I'm Bruce Celery. This is Moolah La, Money Made Simple. Today on the show, we're going to take a listen to the best of retirement interviews. So interviews that really struck us as being insightful, helpful on the topic of what life looks like post-paycheck. For starters, the five R's of retirement. R sounds like something from Pirates of the Caribbean, but it is not. It's just five R's that relate to many of the different aspects that connect to retirement. Patty Leavitt-Reed will be here. She is the chief financial commentator for Home Equity Bank. And according to the latest Mercer Retirement Readiness Barometer, millennial workers who rent their home for their entire career are going to have to save more for retirement than people who bought their home, who were paying a mortgage for many years, in order to achieve the same level of income in retirement. Jillian Kennedy is a partner of Mercer Canada. She is here with more on those findings. Then, whether you are already retired or soon to be, this chapter of your life comes with a lot of change. Financial advisor Brad Gatto will be here to talk about his book, Spending Money and Having Fun, Your Practical Guide to a Fearless Retirement. Plus, the pandemic affected us all in one way or the other, right? Darren Coleman called it the retirement fire drill, which is a pretty great metaphor there. But Coleman is a senior portfolio manager at Coleman Wealth at Raymond James. He's here to talk about what we can learn from our time in COVID-19 as it relates to retirement. This is Moolah La, Money Made Simple, brought to you in part by Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. Let's get started. We talk a lot about retirement on this show, but our next guest actually doesn't love that word. Patricia Leavitt-Reed is Home Equity Bank's first chief financial commentator, and this follows a long and storied career as the chief financial commentator for CTV News and executive roles in the financial services sector for a very long time. She joins me now to talk about this new role and her five R's of retirement. R's of retirement, a word she does not like. Patty, hello and welcome.
Hi, Bruce.
And tell me about this role at Home Equity Bank. I mean, you might not like the idea of retirement, but you've earned it. You don't need another role. You could retire.
Okay, fair enough. Yes, you're absolutely right. It's not about the money. It's never been about the money. Yeah. So, you know, I don't like the word retirement. Have you ever looked it up in the dictionary?
I'm sure it's horrible thing. What is it? What is it derived from?
To become reclusive, to disappear. That's what I want to do with the next third of my life. Uh-huh. No. And you know what? I've talked to so many people. No one wants to, you know, disappear, not have a presence, not be living their best life. But I also think it's a gift if you can continue to do what you love to do. And honestly, I'm at a stage now where I'm collecting not one, but two pensions. And so, yeah, it's good. It's great. But I like the word rewirement.
Rewirement, okay.
I did not coin it, but I embraced it because I do think the next big thing is around the corner. And in my role, what I believe is that if I can help just one person out financially through whatever avenue, whatever venue, then I want to do it. And so that's fulfilling to me. So yes, I made the decision. They called it retirement. I called it life's next steps.
Yeah.
But the 3 a.m. wake up call, it was exhausting. Yeah. After a decade, it just got to be too much.
Yeah, I could barely do it for 2 weeks at a time. And we share our disdain for the word retirement. In my second book, I called it the post-paycheck phase, because there was a time in which we earn paychecks and there's a time that we don't earn a paycheck.
Right.
But I think rewirement's got more of a buzz to it. Now, you have the five R's. I reference like the Pirates of Caribbean because it's like meaty.
Yeah, mine's a little softer.
Everything about you is softer and more delightful. I am abrasive. I'm too much. You're kind and warm and
have you seen my Instagram? I've been told I am very, very, very extra.
Extra. Very extra. They may just be talking about your shoes because your shoes are pretty extra on Instagram, but you're gorgeous in every single one of those photos, even the ones where you're like, you know, ex Instagram reel, you're still gorgeous as always. Okay,
you
five
really
R's.
Do follow me.
Yes. Well, listen. I'm social media savvy. So reassess is okay. Number one. What do you mean by reassess?
Reassess where you're at emotionally and financially. Are you ready to enter into retirement? Do you have a very clear picture? Are you razor sharp on your numbers? Are you counting on the government? Sure, government's going to be there, but it was never intended to fund all of our retirement. And so I often think, okay, how am I going to supplement it? Some people will have saved. They'll use RSPs, tax-free savings accounts. Others will turn a passion into a retirement hustle, not a side hustle, but something that supplements. Others are thinking part-time work. We're going to talk a little bit about those who have really poured all of their equity into their home and maybe decide to take some of that money off the table, not all of it, a portion of it, to fund their retirement. Mm.
Reward is our number two. I like the sound of that.
You know what? Here's the deal. You know, I got this from my mother. She very proudly, mom's 89, claimed to me, made a bold statement. I've not spent a dime of your father's money since he passed away. And I said, oh, I didn't know you had separate bank accounts. And she said, no, we don't. But you know, that's the money from his retirement and that was, and I said, whoa, back up, mama. This is your money. And if you don't spend your money, if you don't enjoy your money, guess what? Your heirs will. I will. I'm going to go out and buy something. And she looked at me and she said, oh. And I said, it's your money. It's your life. Bruce, when I was at my mother-in-law's funeral, this was about 15, almost 20 years ago, a lovely lady came up. She was a former colleague of Marg's. They were nurses. And she said, are you open to some advice, Patty? I said, always. And she said, your golden years are right now. And then I said, oh, you mean don't wait until later in life to do all the things that we talk about? Mm. And she said, well, sort of. The problem is we don't know just how long we have. Mm. So I don't care if you're 20. That's your golden moment. If you're 40, if you're 50, I don't want you to spend as if there's no tomorrow, but I don't want you to save until it hurts. It's not an either or, Bruce. It's an and. Mm. You do both.
Reunite. You have, yes. What, do you have grandbabies now? Is this accurate?
Oh, well, yeah, but I, well, yeah.
Are they
yeah.
a part of your unite? You don't have to be apologetic about the fact that you have grandchildren.
Oh my goodness. Yes, I do. I have four little boys under the age of three, another on the way in September. And I got to tell you, I'm going for the soccer team. It's going to work. But here's what people will tell me when it comes to retirement. What do they look forward to in retirement? Spending time with their family. Mm. What do they worry about most in retirement, Bruce? Spending time with their family. You know, it's about having a balance. And so, you know, reuniting, it's doing what you want, how you want, and figuring it out. And once again, retirement's not one long golf game. I work and I continue to work. And you know what, Bruce, you've done this before and I take my hat off to you. I have never not worked for a large corporation on a full-time basis. Mm. I just never have. Mm. I've never been an entrepreneur. I've never gone out and hustled. I'm doing that now. And I kind of feel like a champion. Like, yeah. I'm like, what? You want to hire me? What? And then they'll say, for how much? And I go, well, what do you think? No, I have no idea.
I'll give you some lessons on how to ask for a bigger speaking fee, Patty. I will. Okay, your next-
I just say yes to all the free ones.
Right. Your next R is restructure.
Yes. So when you ask people, what do they miss most about working? They will say their socialization, the orientation, and the structure to their day. Mm. I get that a little bit because you're what day is it? And what am I supposed to be doing? What I did before? I literally woke up this morning and it was 5 a.m. And I'm so used to getting up at 3 a.m. For a minute there, I thought, am I late? No, you're not late. You don't have to be anywhere. So it's okay. That was a sleep in, mister. But you know, the restructuring of your day takes some work. We have planned for every other element of our life, like in terms of how we're going to do it, what we're going to do it, when we're going to do it. somehow this whole rewirement, you know, we don't give it quite as much thought in a lot of cases as maybe we should.
Reposition is number five.
And I think it should be number one. You know where I'm going with this. It's your portfolio. You know, people have said there's been conventional wisdom. Guess what? You should probably be a lot more conservative. Put your money into a guaranteed investment certificate. You may decide to put it sitting cash. Look at inflation right now. We could do a whole show on inflation and how to get around it. You look at the national average. Well, there's nothing average about inflation in a household. Each household spends their money how they spend their money. And they may be, my mother said, once again, I bring up my mother, have you seen the price of gas? I said, yeah, I do. Why are you watching? You don't drive. And she goes, oh, I know, but I feel for everybody else. Like, you know, so there are different people who spend on different things. And in retirement, you'll see a shift in composition of where you're spending your money. But I do believe you could spend, you know, a third of your life in retirement, maybe 30 years, and then some if you're lucky, depending on your health, of course. But you don't want to err on the side of caution where your money doesn't keep up with inflation. So good quality investments, you do need some money in the stock market, in my opinion. And on the other side of it, you need to tuck away your living expenses in near cash or cash equivalents for, in a perfect world, maybe 3 years, but at least 6 months to a year. So you're not selling out at the wrong time.
The five R's: reassess, reward, reunite, restructure, and reposition, all with Patty Lovett Reed. Thank you, Patricia.
We're being
formal. I decided
now.
I'd finish with formal, or maybe just like the diversity of names that we could refer
Pat,
to.
Patsy, PLR. Didn't you used to call me PLR? Yeah, anyway.
I probably did in official
memos.
Thank
you for having me on.
Thank you for being here. Patty Lovett Reed is the chief financial commentator at Home Equity Bank. Coming up next on Moolala, more of our best of retirement interviews. We'll hear from Jillian Kennedy, partner at Mercer's Wealth Business, about her findings from the recent Retirement Readiness Barometer. And later, why senior portfolio manager Darren Coleman thinks the pandemic was a retirement fire drill. Now, to stay up to date on all things Moolala, just sign up to our newsletter. You can do that at moolala.ca. And every month, just once a month, you're going to get an email that includes links to a whole bunch of other stuff that we're doing on CBC Radio, on CityLine, on BNN Bloomberg, wherever else we happen to be yakking on about money. And we promise, if you sign up for the newsletter, we will do nothing other than send you a newsletter once a month.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Moolala, Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit, as I said. The counseling is free and judgment free. All right, we're going to talk about saving for retirement. A report from Mercer Canada found millennials who rent for their entire careers are going to have to save more for retirement than those who own their own home. It's according to the Mercer Retirement Readiness Barometer. Jillian Kennedy is a partner at Mercer Canada. She leads the firm's Canadian financial wellness strategy, and she joins us now to talk about these findings. Hello there.
Hello.
Were you surprised by this finding number one about renters versus owners?
So we were not surprised. We've been watching this generation for a long time for three reasons. One, they're just not going to have the same level of investment return that past generations have had to grow their savings and rely on that time horizon of compounding interest. But also they have increased levels of debt and now have to deal with cost of living. So we're not surprised by the gap that we've seen with this generation in general.
It is it's like taking a wound and pouring salt and vinegar on it. And then, I don't know, putting your arm in the microwave, something like that, because we already know how difficult it is to afford a home. And that felt like a present issue, but what you're pointing to is it is a future issue, one that is going to have consequences decades and decades later for these millennials.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly why we did the study, is because there's still time to really invest in how this could look different for every generation. But we think it's so important that the steps that individuals are taking now will impact how they'll be able to retire, if they'll be able to retire, and what that retirement looks like in 20 years from now.
Tell me about the math here. So there is a mathematical case to be made for renting and owning to be precisely the same. That is not how it unfolds in practice. What are the differences?
So we wanted this to be really simple. The whole thing, the whole purpose of this study is to encourage discussion. So let's talk about the math. We needed to create two different personas, but we wanted these personas to have the same total kind of, you know, level of behavior. So we assumed they both started saving when they were 25 years old. We assumed that they had $60,000 in earnings, and we assumed that they would both need about 69% of their pre-retirement income in order to be able to retire and afford that retirement. So we started with these two personas having this exact same ways of being able to reach and transition to retirement. And of course, as a consulting firm, we have lots and lots of ways to model different economic outcomes. And so we did this type of modeling and landed on the 75th percentile of outcomes from a financial perspective. But what's really important is what we overlay on top of that. Mm-hmm. So we took someone who owned their home as paying about $500,000. So that's the average from the Canadian Real Estate Association. Again, this is a starter home price. We all know that maybe you can't afford something like this might be much, much higher in certain areas, but this is the average. And then we assumed that somebody who was renting was paying $2,000 a month. And that's where we were able to start to see the deviance and the gap among these two personas.
How big a gap, when all is said and done, at whatever age you decide retirement begins, what's the order of magnitude in terms of how this plays out?
So there are three findings. The big headline finding is that those who rent their home would have to save 50% more than those who own their home. I mean, the bottom line is, and I think we probably all know this in practice, is your home is equity. And if you think about the three-legged stool, going back to fundamentals, the first stool is government benefits. The second leg of that stool is going to be your own personal savings. And the third is equity. And your home is a big part of that equity. But
does it make the assumption that the homeowner sells that home as a way of funding their retirement in part?
So we didn't go that far because this is where we want the discussion to start. We recognize that people will have different ways of treating that equity in retirement and throughout retirement. We also know that some individuals might not have paid off their entire mortgage. We know all of this, but what we want to highlight here is that having a home allows for flexibility. It increases affordability. It increases the quality of life because that person now has that equity that they can do something with, whether it's reverse mortgages or renting out or downsizing or what have you. Whereas that renter is always going to be subject to cost of living increase, affordability issues, and being later in retirement just doesn't have the same type of tools that the home equity provides.
What would you say to a 27-year-old listening to this program who does not have a parent who can underwrite the down payment? Should they sell both their kidneys and their corneas, I don't know, and anything else that they can sell just in order to get on that housing ladder?
So I think the first thing that I would, that we, so this is what came out in the research. This is a very resilient generation. And we do find that there is still time. This is a point in time study. Things could get better. They could get worse. But I think that there are two key takeaways. First of all, we find this generation often has access to some type of workplace program that they can get matching, or they can have some type of discounts in fees or some type of incentive to be able to save. And this generation just does not participate in those workplace programs to the same level that we've seen past generations, because they want the money to be accessible. And so there's kind of a call to action here. Please, please, please take a look at your workplace programs and prioritize that as part of your financials, but also encourage your employer to offer you more flexibility so that you feel comfortable doing so. And then the second call to action is really around financial well-being. We see this in the health space. We know what we need to do to be healthy. We also know what we need to do to be financially well. And so there is some hygiene here to create some good confidence, to be able to have the tools to continue to be resilient and to know when you need to change your course of action. So making sure you're budgeting, making sure you understand what your wants and needs are in that budget, making sure you reach out for help when you need it, and paying down debt.
Your report also talks about not being risk averse. What do you mean?
So we also have seen that in times where individuals are either struggling with prioritizing their money, maybe they have debt, or maybe they're just really sensitive to downturns that we see in financial markets with lots and lots of bad news, potentially creating negative returns. And we actually also took a look at a person that might be transitioning into retirement, and we assumed that they just exited the market. They just sold off all of their equities and were sitting in just a very safe, you know, interest-based GIC for just 3 years before they go into retirement. And we actually found that that individual would have a 10% lower probability of being retirement ready. And so there is also a call to action that, you know, you have time on your side, not only towards retirement, but also in retirement, you continue to invest. And so taking some risk to grow your capital, obviously being mindful of what the risk you're taking based on your tolerance, is always prudent to be able to grow your money faster.
Depending on what you do for a living, there is a certain amount of labor mobility in this country, and all houses are not priced equally. As you say, that average around 500 grand will get you absolutely nothing within 50 kilometers of a major city, but it could buy you a fully detached home in some communities. What advice do you have on millennials really testing their assumptions about where they live and where they choose to build a life?
So I would say taking into consideration, you know, your long-term equity and how you grow that equity. But that's easier said than done. On paper, you can absolutely create a good plan to grow your equity, but you still have to have a good quality of life, right? And so this is the behavior we're starting to see in the research, right? The quality of life is of utmost importance to this generation. And I want to say all generations were seeing this data. And really, this is around this concept of I want to have fun. I want to enjoy my life now in this moment. Mm. So there's a balance there, right, of making sure that you've got the good equity, but have that good quality of life. And I think it's just so great that there are more opportunities now within the workforce to achieve that.
You mentioned how millennials participate less in certain employer plans. Does your data show that they have a harder time making trade-offs between their current self and their future self? Is that anecdotal, or does the data back that up?
That's absolutely what we're seeing in the data. But I also think that there's a call to action to move to allow more flexibility within retirement plans. I do have, you know, all of the, you know, I do see those individuals that are trying to make a decision between, do I take this money that's coming off of my pay that's going to lock in for 20 years, or do I take this money and I actually use it towards paying down my debt? These are questions we get all of the time. And I think the call to action to employers is to allow for this flexibility so that these decisions don't have to be made. Match someone's contribution to a retirement program and allow that company money to grow while still allowing that employee to access that. And I think we're not too far away from that, to be honest, because we see that this is already happening on the health side, where more flexibility has been added to personalized benefits. And we'll see this on the financial side as well.
Thank you, Jillian, for joining us today. It is a very helpful conversation. It's very insightful, your findings. I just wish it smelled more like chocolate cake. You know,
I do too.
I know. I just love. Now, I will say, I have a pan of chocolate brownies that my 13-year-old made. So I'm going to remember every word that you said, but I'm also going to go and have half that pan of brownies to just
I love
get
it.
Over
Sounds
it.
Sounds yeah, great.
Jillian Kennedy, partner at Mercer Canada. She leads the Canadian Financial Wellness Strategy, and she was here to talk about the Mercer Retirement Readiness Barometer, in particular, the difference that millennials will see if they choose to rent for their entire careers or if they choose to bite the bullet and buy their own home.
Hi, it's me, your dad. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.
Coming up later on our Best of Retirement show, Senior Portfolio Manager Darren Coleman tells us why he thinks the pandemic was a retirement fire drill. But first, Brad Gatto, Retirement Income Certified Professional, talks about his book, Spending Money and Having Fun, Your Practical Guide to a Fearless Retirement. And if you have missed an episode of Moolala, do not worry. You can get caught up. If you go to moolala.ca, you can listen to full episodes. But you can also search by the topic name that you have a particular interest in or by a guest. Say you've, you know, heard us talk to someone, you want to see if we've talked to them other times. You can search by any different way. And you can also simply go to the podcast platform where you downloaded the podcast in the first place. That could be Apple Music. It could be Spotify. It could be Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts. While you're there, do us a solid and write a review or subscribe to the next episode.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
The financial services industry spends an enormous amount of time, an enormous amount of energy on having clients accumulate retirement savings, building the nest egg, building. But at a certain stage, if you were lucky, you will change gears and you will start to spend that nest egg, decumulation. So what do you need to keep in mind as you make this shift? It is emotional, it is practical, there's a whole bunch of dynamics connected to it. Brad Gatto is joining us now to talk about that very thing. He is a retirement income certified professional, a designation we don't have here in Canada. He is president of Fiat Wealth Management and the author of Spending Money and Having Fun, Your Practical Guide to a Fearless Retirement. He's in Minneapolis. Hello there.
How you doing?
You begin with a metaphor about mountain climbing. How does that connect to retirement?
Maybe mountain climbing isn't something the vast majority of people have done in their life. And so maybe not exactly personal relational, but I think the other great example there is like climbing a tree. I think it's one point in all of our life, we've climbed a tree, or at least attempted to climb a tree. And one of the realizations when you're climbing the tree is when you get to the point where you're as high as you want to be or need to be or can be, is you kind of look down, and it's a daunting thought. Like actually getting back down the tree sometimes is a lot scarier than climbing the tree. And the path is usually different. You don't use the exact same branches or muscles. And so it's no different in life. You're a saver for decades. You literally live below your means. You save at least a dollar some point in time and live a lot of people well below their means so that they can save a significant amount of money with this idea that eventually I'm not going to be able to work anymore, or I don't want to work anymore. And so I need to have a pile of money set aside. And then all of a sudden this seismic shift happens where you get to the top of that mountain, to use that analogy, and you realize, you know what, this is great. And I'm super excited that I made it to the top of the mountain, but now I have this daunting task of getting back down.
Yeah.
And I've never done that before. I've never, although I just got done climbing a mountain, I've never descended a mountain. And the path is probably a little different. The muscles you're going to use are a little bit different. And frankly, you're not a saver anymore. You have to become a spender. And it's a daunting task.
A fearless retirement is what you're hoping to foster for folks. There are some people who have a very practical, real, and visceral fear because they just don't have enough money saved. The retirement calculator is not on their side. But then there are other people who have fear connected to an irrational concern that they're going to run out of money. You have a very powerful anecdote of a client you were working with who had this aha moment in your presence to see that he actually did have more than enough to live any kind of retirement he could hope for. Tell us about that moment.
So this gentleman, when we kind of interacted with him or kind of found him in his story, he was already retired and had a small pension. He had a Social Security payment. But beyond that, and he had a significant pile of money, you know, things outside of these paychecks that he was getting, and wasn't really spending a lot of it. In fact, if I remember correctly, I think he was spending about $600 a month supplementing his Social Security pension. And we asked him the simple question, why aren't you spending more? Because he had talked about in our conversation some of his dreams, the things that he wanted to do in life. And so then, of course, begged the question, well, why aren't you doing these things? And to which he alluded to what you're talking about, the fear of, well, gosh, I don't know if I can afford to do it. I don't know if I have enough money. And so I just pulled out my phone because there's, you know, we all have calculators on our phones these days. And I just started doing the math of how much money he had set aside versus this $600 a month. And I just, you know, I looked at him and I said, did you know that if you took all of your money out of the market, because he had some irrational fears about the market too. He had one particular stock that he was invested in that just stopped paying a dividend. And that was really had him worried. I said, you know, if you just took all of your money out of the market and you, you know, put it all in between your mattress or buried it in your backyard in the Folgers can or something like that. And, you know, every month you went to the mattress, you went to the Folgers can, you just pull out that same $600. Do you know how long your money would last? And he said, no, I've never thought about it that way. And I said, 200 years.
Wow.
Your money would last 200 years. You don't need to be concerned about running out of money. If you were going to have any concerns, it would be how in the world am I going to spend all of this? And the correct answer is probably that you're not going to. So if you have fear around anything, it should be the idea of figuring out how to efficiently pass it to the next generation and who you want to give it to, because they're not going to let you take it with you.
You write that there is no freedom without boundaries. What does that mean? And what does that mean in this context?
Yeah, I love the analogy here of swimming in the ocean. And if you have an irrational fear of sharks, you're probably going to stay out of the ocean, right? That said, if there was buoys set up, you know, in an area in the ocean that said, hey, there are no sharks in this area, those are boundaries that are set up, but those boundaries actually create freedom for you. They don't limit you. Your fear is the limitation. You're going to stay out of the ocean in general because you don't understand where things are safe and where they're not safe. You just know that there's a possibility of things going wrong. And so the boundary in that scenario actually creates freedom. It doesn't limit you. And a lot of that is true of your finances as well. Like if you knew the answers to questions like, am I going to run out of money? If I spend this amount of money, is that going to be a problem? If I stay invested in the markets and we have a recession, is that going to put me on my heels or make it such that I'm going to run out of money? And if you could start to answer some of these questions and kind of put up these boundaries for yourself where you understand where the sharks are and where they're not, it can actually give you that, you know, that big kind of breath of like, okay, I can do this.
You have a whole chapter on this idea of the sequence of return. So we've talked some about the mindset of this transition from accumulation to decumulation. And then there's the math. And there is some very real and, I don't know, concerning math about how you manage that decumulation and the order in which you pull your money out to put groceries in your fridge or take a trip or whatever. Tell us more about what that means and strategies people should employ to ensure that they're optimizing the sequence of returns.
Well, in your savings years, just putting money aside and investing the money and kind of closing your eyes and just, you know, opening your eyes the day you summit the mountain is actually for most people, the best possible strategy. Because a lot of times when you actually look at the pile of money and you try to manage it, people end up becoming their own worst enemy and they trail market returns and these sorts of things. It's so different when you get there, though. You can't just kind of ad hoc throw money in the markets and just kind of let it go. When you're spending, you have to be cognizant of when the markets go up and when they go down, because we do know both of those things are going to happen. And what we don't know is when they're going to happen and the timing of when the market's going to go up and when it's going to go down. And while that does not matter in your accumulation years, because if you have, you know, if you're the person that comes out of college and the economy's terrible the day you come out of college, and so you're the start of your savings career is in a depressive market or in a recessive state versus somebody that comes out of college in a really, really good time, but you both average the same rate of return over the 20, 30, 40 year period that you're in your savings years, you're going to end up with the same pile of money. It doesn't matter the timing of the return. All that matters is the average rate of return. But when you get to retirement, that's not true at all. You could average 7% and your neighbor could average 7% and your brother-in-law could average 7% and have the same set of facts. But the timing of when you get the returns can make it such that one of you dies a millionaire and the other one dies on Medicaid or dies broke. And it's because when you're pulling money out and using that money for your lifestyle, if you're pulling it out during a recessive state or when the markets are down, you're basically locking those losses in. And that does affect long-term, you know, the outcome or how long that pile, so to speak, is going to last. And so we've got to be cognizant of that. And as fearful and as scary as that sounds, there are answers, right? It's not like it's just this depressing, like, well, there's nothing you do. It just is what it is. And kind of hopefully you make it. It's not like that at all.
So give me some of the answers.
You need to bucket money.
Okay. You need to bucket money. Do you mean by asset class?
No, I mean by time. So we try to keep it super simple. Anything more than three for most people is too much. And so we have three buckets. So we have a now bucket, a soon bucket, and a later bucket. And the now and the later bucket are the easy ones. The now bucket is the money we plan on using to spend for your fun and lifestyle for the next year or two, depending on a certain set of facts, if we need a year, if we need 2 years. But keep it simple, we'll just say 2 years. And so that bucket of money is going to be basically non-risk stuff, cash and cash equivalents, because the markets are so volatile in the short term that we just don't even want to play that game. So we're just going to leave it in cash. Now I don't have to worry about inflation a ton because it's very short-term money, although it is there. Later money, which is over 10 years, this is the money I don't need for at least 10 years. So I need some of it today. I need some of it soon. I need some of it later, right? The later money, we can leave it in the markets. If we've got 10 years to kind of let it bake, if you watch kind of market cycles, if we've got 10 years to be in equities, there's a 90 something odd percent chance we're going to end up with significantly more money than we started with. I like those odds. It's that weird middle bucket of, I can't let it sit in cash for any more than 2 years because then I really start to lose to inflation. And if I go to equities for anything less than 10 years, I'm not investing anymore, I'm gambling. And so that's where you've got to find some creative ways to get a little bit of growth on your money to kind of outdo inflation, but not be purely in equities. And so there's a lot of planning that goes into that bucket, and it can be a lot of different asset classes. And so I don't want to get too specific because actually it changes all the time. It won't make sense in that bucket, but making sure that the time frame of when the money is going to be spent is imperative to how it's invested. The best analogy I can give you here is, can you imagine, Bruce, being 22 years old and you get out of college and you get your first job and you're going to pay 50 grand a year, you know, for 40 years plus, you know, pay raises or whatever. But instead of paying you every 2 weeks, they hand you your entire 40 year career paycheck at 22 years old. They hand you, you know, $2.5 million.
Vegas, baby, Vegas.
Right. What are the odds that that 22 year old has any money left at 30, you know, let alone 65, but that's the daunting task you have when you retire, is you got this pile of money and it's your job for the first time in your life to budget it out. You know, we kind of complain about how often we're paid, every 2 weeks, once a month, but it actually forces habits and behavior on people that are positive because you have to live within your means. Whereas in retirement, you don't have that. And so you got to create those boundaries for yourself.
So you, as I said in the title of your book, Spending Money and Having Fun. Why is that in the title of your book? We just got about 1 minute left.
Because this is the fear is what drives a lot of people. And it's the number one emotion that comes out in retirement is, yes, you're happy you quit your job, you know, and then you finally get to do the thing. But the fear of like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I have enough. Am I going to run out? Am I making the right decisions and all that kind of stuff? It shouldn't be that at all. We talk about this every day as Saturday lifestyle at Fiat all the time. And that's what I mean by that. In order for you to have fun, you need to have the hard questions answered so that you can get rid of the fear and not just spend the money, but have fun doing it and not have this innate fear of every time you go to spend money that it's going to cause a problem.
The book is Spending Money and Having Fun, Your Practical Guide to a Fearless Retirement. The author, Brad Gatto. Brad, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely, Bruce. It was a ton of fun. Thanks for having me.
Brad Gatto is also the president of Fiat Wealth Management. Coming up next on the Best of Retirement episode, was the pandemic a retirement fire drill? Darren Coleman thinks so. He tells us why. On social media, you can keep in touch or keep up to date on what we find interesting. On Twitter, at Bruce Sellery, spelled S-E-L-L-E-R-Y, or Bruce Sellery Moolala on Facebook. If you have a question or a comment about the show, we would love to hear from you. Our email address is ask@moolala.ca.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Sellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
A retirement fire drill. That is how my next guest describes one aspect of the pandemic. Darren Coleman, Senior Portfolio Manager at Coleman Wealth at Raymond James, joins us now from Oakville, Ontario, with this, I don't know, refreshing take, empowering take on what was a horrendous couple of years. Darren, when you say a retirement fire drill as it relates to the pandemic, what do you mean?
Well, I think the whole experience really began, I call it like a weird reverse camping trip, you know, like you were stuck on your campsite, you couldn't go anywhere, and you were not entirely sure you had enough toilet paper. So that's, I think, how it began for most of us. But as we began going through the experience, which lasted longer than I think anyone expected it to, it really did become like a fire drill. So if you think about what a fire drill is, it's an exercise that's kind of forced upon us to see and test how well are we prepared for an emergency or something that might be coming. And I look at this idea of it being a fire drill for retirement, because retirement is in many ways about, you now have more time on your hands, your circle around you might get a little smaller, work is changing. So there's a lot of lessons I think we all learned as a result of COVID that if we think about them consciously, if we're mindful of how our lives adapted and adjusted, I think that can actually make for a vastly better retirement experience. And I also believe that this whole concept of retirement is very much changed, partially by the boomers, but I think also by this experience that we went through together, because everyone went through the same thing, but we all experienced it incredibly differently.
You were quoted in an article in Forbes near the beginning of the pandemic and talked about the problem, it was phrased as a problem, of having too much time. What did you mean then?
Well, we were suddenly forced to do things that maybe we hadn't thought about. You couldn't just go to the mall. I mean, you know, in Ontario, where we are, we were probably the most locked down jurisdiction in North America, where we weren't really allowed to leave unless you had to buy groceries or walk your dog. That was about it. So we were now stuck, if you will, at home. And what do we do? And one of the things that was advantageous for me was getting to know Dr. Joe Coughlin at the Age Lab at MIT. And they're doing all this work about how retirement is not really retirement anymore. It's all about longevity. And they've got three questions that they ask of us to see how well prepared are we for retirement. And those three questions really, I think, set up really good metaphors for how prepared are we. So the first one is, how do you change your light bulbs? How will you change your light bulbs? So that's really the idea around how will you look after those day-to-day tasks in your life. You know, when you're 87, you probably shouldn't be on your ladder changing the light bulbs. Yeah. The next one is, who will I have lunch with? So how will I maintain my social groups if I don't have the ability to go out and see them, or if my social groups get a bit smaller? And then the final one is, how do I go out and get an ice cream, which is all about mobility? How do I get to the things that I want, or can I bring the things to me? And so from our perspective as advisors, I've really paid attention to those three concepts as they've manifested themselves through the period of time where we really couldn't go anywhere.
There were so many hot takes, so many views about what would change as a result of the pandemic, which, as you say, went on much longer than anybody expected. What didn't change? As you reflect 3 years later, you go back to that article, and it really was in the early weeks. What hasn't changed about retirement?
Well, I think the fact that people aren't prepared for it is still the true, right? Mm-hmm. I think the fact that people underestimate how long it's going to last and how much it's going to cost and the impact on your social relationships, on your business relationships, on just how are you going to spend all those extra hours and all that extra life you're going to live? I think people are still not prepared for that. That hasn't changed. I've done this as a financial advisor for 30 years, and it still surprises me at how surprised people are. You know, that they're living longer than they thought, they're living more actively than they thought. And, you know, when I started in this industry 30 years ago, when I met with someone in their 70s, they were old, like think Golden Girls old, like they were children of the Depression. They were teens and adults during World War II. They were the great generation. And today, if you're 75, you're probably still doing 10Ks and buying racing.
Oh yeah, kayaks. You're crushing me at pickleball. If you're
yeah, exactly right. Uh-huh. So it's a fundamentally different human I'm talking to in so many ways, and I think that surprises people how active and vital they remain as they get older, providing their health still stays well.
One of the things that I think all of us saw in various ways was how we returned to our life as things opened up again, and what we chose to do and what we chose not to do.
Bring
that to the conversation on to our conversation about retirement, because when you talk about the fire drill, we had this reset, and for those of us who are going to work for decades to come, we did make different choices on how we would work, how we would socialize, how we would develop business, all those sorts of things, which is a change that a retiree would need to make, but just maybe later in life.
Absolutely. So this is why I say it is a fire drill, because that change was now forced upon us before maybe many of us were ready for it. And retirement also tends to sneak up on people, right? Many people are not ready for it despite the changing of the calendar, even though they know when they're turning 60 or 65 or whatever their date is, it still surprises them when they get there. So here we had it forced upon so many of us. And I would argue that anyone who did a financial plan or thought about their future in 2018, nope, none of that is probably accurate anymore. That's all gone out the window. And I think the pandemic forced us to really reconsider what was important to us. What were the things that we were going to go back to when we were allowed to go back? And what became a priority? Maybe what wasn't a priority anymore? And what relationships did that all got stress tested, right? So what relationships did I really miss and I want to go back to? And then I'm sure all of us have people in our lives that, maybe I don't really need to hang out with them anymore.
Right, right. You know? Preferably it's not your spouse or your kids or your parents.
Well, certainly these things all happened, right? They all these things happen. And I think the other element that we also have to be mindful of is how do we look after our parents and other people the generation ahead of us? Because many families discovered, wow, we don't really have a great circle of care around mom or dad. So that became a big priority. And that goes back to the changing the light bulbs. How are we going to help? I may be okay to change my life. What about mom? And do they have enough food? What's their health care like? What's their mental health like? How do I look after them when I can't get to them? And things like technology and services have certainly adapted to enable a lot of these things that weren't there or were there, but in their infancy just a few years ago. And I think most of us probably had a Zoom party with friends. I had one with kids I went to elementary school with. Somebody decided to host this thing. And that was, I mean, we all looked like our parents, which was very strange on the Zoom call. But I don't think we would have done that if it hadn't have been for this experience.
Right, right. I want to weave in the financial aspect here, because I think your metaphor is apt when it comes to investments in retirement, in that there was a sudden and significant decline in the stock market that would have people go, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to retire.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that's not the way it worked out over the course of time, and markets have proven to be quite resilient. How would you, what learning would you reflect on as you think about the financial aspect?
Yeah, that's a great point, Bruce, because that's another fire drill that we all had. And I think anyone that was paying attention even slightly got an abject lesson. And here's what you need to do to invest. Investing isn't all that hard. It's predicting the future that's hard. And that's what causes most of the problems. Everybody gets caught up in thinking what might happen next. But if you just maintained a disciplined approach through all of that and ignored the news, you were fine. But we had that wicked volatility that came in really sharply as the world seemed to, like, we don't know what's going on. And then the response by governments and central bankers was also surprising. And none of that was very easily predicted, obviously. And so if you just did nothing and didn't even open your statements and you just maintained a reasonably well-balanced portfolio, you were fine at the end of that. And I think, and then we saw kind of a repeat of that again in 2022 of back down the other way. Now it's coming back up again. So I think the lesson investors ought to take from that is maybe I should just mind my own behavior and not touch the portfolio so much.
Right. I'd love it if that was the learning. Because as you say, you've been around a long time. I've been around a long time. So we have seen the dot-com boom and bust, the financial crisis, like all these things where if you just did nothing, you were awesome. It was the people who didn't do nothing that had a harder time.
There's a very old adage in our industry, which I'm surprised people forget. So I'll remind everybody that your investment portfolio is like a bar of soap. The more you touch it, the smaller it gets.
Right.
And that remains, I heard that 30 years ago, that remains to be true today. It's always that way.
On the fire drill, the other thing that people experienced was different needs and wants in terms of a sense of place. And we've seen, and it's anecdotal, but I think it probably plays out in the data too, that many people either look for a second home or they move to a smaller community or they bought a bigger home because they realized, geez, if these people are going to be around all the time, I better have a space to crawl away and hide. What of that trend has proved to be sustained over time? And what has unwound as we realize, actually, our job is going to require us to go into the office sometimes?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a few people that decided to move, you know, in Ontario that I decided to move up north and just thought I can be a remote worker or move south. And maybe I didn't have the freedom I thought when the boss says I need to come back into the office. And I think that's actually something that employers are struggling with too, is that people made very different life decisions. And as we've seen, the employment market has been very, very tight. The employment numbers have been far better than anyone anticipated. Like the numbers we saw in January in Canada were 10 times better than estimated. So those are not small misses. Like the employment situation is very robust. So if you're an employer and you demand your staff come back to work, if they choose not to, they can get another job pretty easily. So it's interesting how people's decisions to put where I wish to live and have my lifestyle, now that I don't need to commute anymore, have really moved that power balance around a little bit. So certainly there's some people that went, oh, geez, maybe I got ahead of myself. Others are like, no, this, I don't want to commute. And I've done that in my business. We were on Bay Street for 30 years and we decided, yeah, we don't really need to do this anymore. Cause what's the point of going downtown to just be on Zoom all the time?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't we just remote home? So the technology has really enabled, I think, people to have more control if they have that opportunity, and many are seeking it and using it.
Darren, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Bruce.
Darren Coleman, Senior Portfolio Manager at Coleman Wealth at Raymond James. He joined us to talk about the retirement fire drill that was that little thing called the pandemic. Well, that's our show for today. Hope you enjoyed our best of interviews on retirement. There's a never-ending number of things we can talk about, and we'll continue to do that coming into the next season as well. A thank you to our sponsor, Credit Canada, the first and longest-standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. Our email address, ask@moolala.ca. You can send us your questions, your comments, your feedback, your, I don't know, whatever else you, however you want to get in touch with us or about what you would like to get in touch with us, please send us an email. I am on social media, on Twitter at Bruce Selry, on Facebook, Bruce Selry Moolala. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.